You're about to watch what we call an extended clip of the Young Turks, and the reality is it's somewhere in the middle. It's a little longer than our YouTube clips, but it's actually shorter than the whole 2-hour show, which you can get if you're a member. You can get it ad-free, and make sure you catch every news story we do that day. You're going to love it as a full show. That's at tytnetwork.com/join. Thanks for watching. Drop it. All right, fun power panel for you guys. Katie Halper's back. Hey, Katie,
hey.
How you doing? All right, I'm Jake Uecker. Francesca Fiorentini.
Hey.
John Iderola.
Hello.
Two Italian names, one fun, the other one a little clunky.
Yeah, but she's a guest, so we're still going to be nice to her.
Oh, okay, all right.
Nice play. And yet, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez just rolls off your tongue every single time. I struggle with that.
It is long. But as we were just talking about off air, I can't complain. I named my son Prometheus,
right,
which is fairly long as well, to say the least. Let alone Uyghur rolling off the tongue,
oh, yeah,
especially the original version, Uyghur. Anyways, okay.
Easy. Names again.
So, here's the situation. I have challenged Ted Cruz to a debate, offered $10,000, not kidding. He responded. So, at the top of the next hour, I will respond to his response. Okay, so that'll be fun for everybody. We will share the tweets back and forth for you guys, and then I'll tell you, you know, basically how we'll structure it, et cetera, if he agrees.
The Roberts rules?
I mean, look, he responded, so apparently he's considering it.
I don't think he's going to.
Well,
I mean,
we'll find out.
He did sort of debate Bernie, I guess.
Yeah, no.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
So when you initially tweeted, requesting one with him, why did you choose Ted Cruz?
Mm. Ooh, yeah.
So that it would be easy.
Okay. Oh, but you have to wear like a face mask, because what if he coughs up one of those chunks? Remember that debate?
Yeah,
he spoke, and there was something
like,
that came.
Like all the hatchlings that are in his mouth, so usually. Spawning.
We'll figure all that out. All right, so we'll talk about it for real in the top of the next hour, okay? So we got a hell of a show for you guys. Unfortunately, a lot of stories about race. Right when Get Ready to Cry. But you're the ones who brought it up. Laura Ingraham, we'll talk about in the second hour, talking about demographic changes. There's plenty to talk about in terms of the alt-right and their views on race in this hour. We're going to get to in a little bit. But I love the first story and how much the Koch brothers keep accidentally helping us.
Yeah. And the left. They're the best spokespeople for the left, unintentionally.
Yeah, apparently so. And definitely unintentionally, but we will take it. All right, welcome to Home of Progressives. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. Apparently, I've heard through Q, actually, that the Koch brothers are secretly Leninists.
Mm. Well,
and they're working behind the scenes. No, that's ridiculous.
Well, actually, if you had said Stalinist, you would be massively correct.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Originally, they made their fortune. Fred Koch, their father, made their fortune by working with Stalin.
I didn't know this.
Yeah, not metaphorically, not
they're
symbolically.
Stalinists.
He was literally a Stalinist. He worked for Stalin. He said later he regretted it, and that's why he went really right wing. He didn't give the money back, though. That's the interesting part.
Yeah,
he didn't give it back.
Their nanny also was a Nazi.
Is that right?
If you've read the book Dark Money, Jane Mayer, nanny was a Nazi. And
good. They're fair and balanced. Both, you know, the right and left.
They have it all coming together. So that's why they're throwing us these curveballs.
Yeah.
So why don't we see what they've been up to lately? Yeah. As Cenk alluded to, lately the Koch brothers just can't stop making the case for the left. A couple of weeks ago, as we reported at the time, they funded a study of Medicare for All, the likely costs of it, what would it actually cost to do. And obviously they went into that with a particular goal in mind. But unfortunately, it turned out that they discovered that, you know, it looked like it would actually save trillions of dollars over our current system, while at the same time providing better health care to more people. And now we come to this week, where they're just covering all the rest of the ground, basically. They have this new group that they set up, I believe, less than a year ago called In Pursuit Of, which is mildly threatening.
Yeah.
I don't entirely know what that's about. But they polled Americans about a number of different issues. And going into it, obviously, the Koch brothers are hoping to show that Americans are, you know, like staunch capitalists, and, you know, they support certain libertarian principles. To give you an idea of one example of that, One of the things the survey found was that 86% of Americans said the right to personal property is key to a free and just society. Which, can you ask a question that more people are just going to answer yes to without really thinking about it? That means virtually nothing.
No, it means that 14% of America might be communist.
Maybe. The news is that anyone doesn't support that, right?
Right. Yeah. Like, so there's 14% of Americans that are either opposed to or not sure that we should have personal property? That is interesting.
That's
news.
Pretty cool.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not sure I agree, but okay. I didn't know that the country had that big a percentage of super left wing.
So I do. Property is theft. Yeah. Anyway, moving on.
So that's basically, that's one of the very top level sort of like libertarian capitalist things that they were pulling about. But they also pulled about a lot of particular policies as well. And that's where they might not have gotten exactly the result that they wanted. I guess to their credit, they still released the information as they did with their Medicare for All study a couple of weeks ago. So let's talk about some of the other findings from this Koch-funded study. The poll found that 66% of Americans would find, quote, government-paid college tuition as either a very effective or somewhat effective solution to social barriers. And fully half of all Americans said it would be very effective.
Oops.
I did it again, said the Koch brothers.
So I'm waiting for the Associated Press to write a story about, no, they didn't.
Yeah.
Right. So when the Koch brothers had this study about Medicare for All, and it turns out they're like, it costs $32.6 trillion, which is actually less than what healthcare costs today. In fact, according to their own study, if Medicare paid the doctors and the hospitals what they pay now, they actually did Medicare, we would save $2 trillion. The Associated Press had to go do damage control for the Koch brothers by saying, but Bernie Sanders pointing that out, it's not fair. Not fair how? And then they had to do a fact check after we sent them videos showing how wrong they were. And the fact check said, yeah, that's what the study says, but we still don't like Bernie Sanders. Yeah.
Right.
So I can't wait for the Associated Press to fact check this and go, even though 2/3 of the country says they would like government funded public education, we're going to pretend they said otherwise. Right. Associated Press, you're up.
People like private property, remember that? Yeah, let's go back to the private property stuff. I think the Koch brothers are just doing this to like make sure they're not in touch with the American people. They're just like, oh, cool. Let's keep running things. Got it. Like, let's keep moving the opposite way of where everyone says we should be going.
Yeah. Maybe they were like, are we sure we're on the wrong side of things?
Are
let's
we
just
evil
double
enough?
Check.
Yeah. Yeah,
right. All right. What else are they on the wrong side?
Okay. Well, here's a big one. You might have heard of this in a number of different primary elections in the cycle that we're in. A $15 minimum wage was almost as popular, with 35% saying it would be a very effective solution, 30% saying it would be a somewhat effective solution. So again, a big chunk higher than a majority of the country saying not just a minimum wage or a good minimum wage, but a $15 an hour minimum wage.
Wait, but isn't that something like only straight white Bernie bros like, and like no one else likes that, and to support stuff like that you have to be a misogynist, racist, homophobe?
Yeah, yes. Probably, but it turns out 65% of the country
are
apparently Bernie bros. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do people want higher wages? Of course, of course they do. The fact that that's surprising is amazing, but people in Washington and New York and the power centers have convinced themselves, no, people do not want higher wages. The Koch brothers are right. Koch brothers, by the way, actually not only fight against higher wages and higher minimum wage all across the country, they lobby against it, they spend money to do it. They'd probably just pay less money if they just paid higher minimum wage than spending all that money on lobbies.
Right, that's true.
Which actually, of course, they've done the math on
it. I mean,
it.
This it's is.
Not, but not only that, they at times have argued there should be no minimum wage at all. Okay, so this is exactly counter to their things, but they do the study and they're like, ah, damn it, here we go again. It turns out the American people are totally opposed to our philosophy.
But that's actually kind of, that gets into why I think it's at least somewhat surprising because of the power of propaganda in this country and how workers have been beaten down decade after decade after decade. We had the head of Missouri's AFL-CIO on the Damage Report this morning to talk about Proposition A being taken down, and he talked about this campaign that's been ongoing for a half century or so to convince workers that unions are their enemies.
Right.
And the thing is, so the Koch brothers, everything you said about them is true, but a lot of Republican politicians say the exact same thing. They advocate for lower or no minimum wage. Donald Trump twice in debate said that wages are too high, And these politicians keep getting reelected. Didn't seem to hurt Donald Trump. I didn't see it in a lot of ads or anything like that. And so I would not be surprised if more people had bought into some of the propaganda about minimum wage.
I mean, I think two things. One, the numbers on this like are the least generous, right? Like, I mean, they're trying to do everything they can to make sure this is as small as possible. And two,
we need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
It's still breaking through. It's still, you see the majority of people do support some universal health care, minimum wage, yes, assistance with attending college and affordable college tuition. Like, and despite all the propaganda, despite all this, the state policy network, which is like an anti-union, union busting, despite ALEC, all the money that is, you know, the American Legislative Exchange Council that funnels legislation to all different states to roll back workers' rights that the Koch brothers finance, despite all that, this is peeking through the cracks, which means, like, I want another study. Like, I want, like, we should cross-study this, because I bet the numbers are even more staggering.
I actually am thankful to the Kochs that they did this study, because there, this doesn't, it's not incongruous with any other poll that's ever been done. Medicare for All polls incredibly well, so do all of these positions, including $15 minimum wage, et cetera.
They're not radical,
but
the propaganda.
The mainstream media doesn't pay attention to those polls. They immediately ignore them. This might actually get their attention, because they're like, oh, these are our friends, the Koch brothers, that funded this. And it, and besides that, beyond just, you know, tweaking the mainstream media, but it is a little bit of man bites dog, right? So they're like, oh, whoa, that's a Koch study, and they might, but it shows the Kochs are wrong. So that might get their attention.
Maybe.
And the reality is these are massively popular positions in every single poll, but yet when you turn on cable news, you hear the exact opposite as if it's true. And so there is a little bit of truth in the whole, you know, the fact that the mainstream media is not representative of the American
people. And I will say that, having worked in news and a lot of friends who are journalists, that they go out of their way when they see a study that is positive in terms of Medicare for All, that positive in terms of minimum wage, and they go out of their way to find the opposite. So you will go and you'll get your Heritage Foundation study. You'll go and all these other right-wing think tanks in order to sort of create some sort of balance. The cover is blown. I mean, it's 2018, and people, I mean, we're more unequal than we were during the Roaring Twenties, right before the, you know, the Great Depression. And it's like, can we stop pretending that there's any kind of balance? That there's like, well, we got to get our right-wing studies in. No, stop it. Like,
But that's an assault on the truth in favor of neutrality.
Right.
And so the
neutrality.
Yeah. No. No. It's real neutrality, but it's not objectivity. Right. Neutrality is 70% of Americans think that Wall Street should be regulated. That's objective. Lead, this poll shows, and almost every poll shows, in this case, is 69% of Americans say they want Wall Street to be tightly regulated. Neutrality says, Some want Wall Street to be regulated and some don't. Wait a minute, you're calling it even when it's not even. Right. It's 7-3. Call it what it actually is. But they do go out of their way to do that because they're cowed by Republicans who constantly attack them. So they help right-wing framing by pretending things are neutral when they are not. The American people are not unclear. So 70% of them say, God damn it, regulate Wall Street. 71% of them, according to this Koch funded study, and again, almost every poll, say we want guaranteed childcare. You say that on cable news, I guarantee you will be attacked. They'll say, oh, radical. Yeah. I say, well, how are we going to afford it? It's not practical. That seems like a radical position. Are 70% of Americans radical?
Can I ask you a question? Do you think that these kinds of polls matter? I mean, sure, they matter to people like us who care, and you know, we believe in that democracy should ultimately work. But like, when it comes to, I mean, do we have to make the economic argument? Which I know we have the Koch brothers sponsored other data that showed that it was more affordable to have Medicare for all than the current system we have.
There's like a moral framing, and then there's a pragmatic framing. But right. I think why this is so useful is that it shows that when people try to hide behind pragmatism and pretend, the Kochs don't do this, but I mean, liberals do this all the time. They pretend, it's not that we're opposed to single payer Medicare for all, $15 minimum wage, it's just that they're not viable.
Sure.
They're not doable because America isn't ready yet. Good luck passing that in, you know, anywhere outside of the coasts. And now we know that that's not true, right? I mean, you can,
of
course,
support.
That it does have support and it's not a radical idea. And so when people say the opposite, we know that they are actually ideologically committed to stopping something like single payer, or they're uninformed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
By the way, can we just mention, because we've talked around this just a little bit, but inside of this study as well, of sort of bearing the lead, I guess, 55% said a government-run healthcare system would be a very or somewhat effective policy response.
So, and 92% said that they are having problems with the cost of healthcare, which is unsurprising. I want to focus on that a little bit. But look at the framing. To Francesca's point earlier, government-run healthcare is a way of framing it so you get a negative response.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Instead of Medicare,
right,
which
right.
is popular, Medicare yes. for all. Okay, so they right. frame it in what they think is going to get the most negative response. It's still a
right.
solid 55%
right.
go.
So it's higher than that.
Yeah,
probably.
Yeah, no.
It must be higher than that.
Yeah,
right.
give me government-run healthcare. Give
right.
me government-guaranteed childcare. Well, give me government-funded public education. The answer is yes. How many times do I have to say
right.
yes? And when you do say yes, again, here's what they will say on cable news. Well, I mean, of course, the American, if they're caught and they're faced with actual facts they cannot deny, although they almost never get caught because they almost never let progressives on air. So they're never in a situation where they are confronted by the fact that they are basically, look, I don't think that they're doing it with intent and or with malice, but they are in essence lying to the American people when they say that people don't want it, when they clearly do want it. And if you shove the poll in their face on the air, which again, almost never happens. So if you do that, they go, well, I mean, yeah, they might want it, but they don't really know how much it costs. Wait a minute, though. You never said that about the wars. And you never
right,
said
yes,
that about
right.
the tax cuts.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Did you
they
say-
barely say that about the current healthcare system.
yeah.
Right, that's the other issue, right? So there, this, which you brought up, Francesca, which is regardless kind of this poll, and we all know, and Ocasio-Cortez brought this up the other day to Chris Cuomo, which is that we all know no one ever asks people where they're going to find the money to fund a war. No one's going to ever ask people where they're going to find the money to offer the rich a tax cut. It's only when there are things that actually help most people
yep.
that we're supposed to scratch our heads and scramble and figure out where we're going to find the money for it.
Could you yeah. imagine after 9/11? And I mean, in that mm-hmm. case, it's incredibly egregious because we went to war with the wrong country. But if when the Republicans said, hey, we need to go to war because of 9/11, at a bare minimum, what the reporter should have said is, well, Iraq didn't attack us. But they didn't even say that. But getting beyond that, could you imagine if they said, well, you say the American people want war, but do they know how much it costs? That's not very practical.
Right.
Could you imagine? They would never dare say that. Mm-hmm. But when it's something that helps your family, they say it immediately. It's almost as if they have an establishment bias.
Mm. A war that is still not over, by the way, the one that was started after 9/11. I also, I think that what bothers me about this also is that the left is always called ideological,
right?
Right? And that I think that was sort of the takeaway from this week's election was that when sort of progressive insurgents did not win, it was like, well, we see that Democrats are not motivated by ideology. It's like, I'm sorry, what of all this, mm-hmm. which are part of the planks of these progressive Dems, what of this is ideological? There's nothing ideological.
There's nothing fringe or radical about it. It's fairly mainstream. And when people on the left, progressives, insurgents, socialists, whatever, the people who run the gamut, When they win, it's a fluke. Mm. When they lose, it's because their ideas just aren't popular. Yeah. So the framing is very convenient.
Yeah, the press is a massive, massive establishment bias.
Yeah.
So I mean,
guess what, guys? They don't admit. So if you raise that, they're like, but I'm not establishment. Oh, okay, thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah,
we thought you were
really
one of those self-identifying establishment outlets.
Yeah. So to Francesca's point, when somebody on the left argues for a position, they go, oh, that's so ideological, right, as if it's like an insult, right?
Yeah.
Whereas if a conservative does it, they're like, that's principled. Mm-hmm. See, he's fighting on principle. Whereas the left is just being ideological and hence not practical.
Pie in the sky.
Right? So, and I want to just say, I've now interviewed, I think, hundreds of candidates across the country on Rebel Headquarters, another show that we have. And what they say is, overwhelmingly, the three issues that everyone is bringing up, by the way, Democrat, Republican, or Independent, is one is healthcare is killing us. We're in constant stress over, am I going to have insurance? Am I going to be able to pay for it? Am I going to get bankrupt, et cetera? There is, healthcare is destroying our health, okay? The state, like people in, again, on TV have no idea how bad it is right now in the country. You knock on people's door, that's the first thing they say. Secondly is wages, for God's sake, wages. Third thing, which is actually a little bit surprising to me, not college for all, which I advocate for, but student loan debt, crushing.
Yeah.
It's an albatross around the neck of the whole country. So these are the issues that actual Americans care about, and how often are they talked about on television? Almost never, and if you dare do it, they call you a radical. Go knock on any American's door and see if they're radical. Look at any polling, see if they're radical. Yeah. Who's the radical one if 70% of Americans are on our side?
At TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your active ID more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's expressvpn.com/TYT. Check it out today.
I remember seeing Sanders at a speech, I think in New York at Cooper Union. He's like, it's not, the good news is it's not like we're a bunch of radicals out in the mountaintops, you know, like on the vanguard. It's like, you know, these are popular ideas, they have popular support. It's a great moment.
And I think it's disrespectful sometimes when mainstream media and establishment basically, because you hear this like, well, Americans don't really care about issues, right? They're just more gut oriented.
I don't even know what that means.
Right. And that they, if you ask them an issue that they care about, they don't even know. It's just whether they support the president or not. That is so utterly disrespectful to like Americans who know what they're facing and know what they're struggling with. And I think it's a total BS lie to say that if you ask Americans before elections what they care about, that they don't know. That it's just, well, I don't know, I had a sandwich for lunch. Like, no, they know. I think you're right.
Your gut sandwich. Gut check.
Exactly. Gut check.
Oh, literal. Literal. Well, Katie nailed that
screen.
One. Okay. So last thing, guys. We use the TYT Army to ask Associated Press about their incredibly inaccurate story on the Medicare for All issue. They seem to have responded because they literally said in the fact check, a popular video being sent around. And you guys sent it around hundreds of times to those AP reporters.
Yes.
So this morning we asked the TYT Army to send my video blasting their fact check. So let's do it again. Okay. TYT.com/army to become, I did it on a lark kind of a couple of weeks ago. 1,994 people have signed up for the Army. Okay, so and we're gonna keep pounding this stuff. There's more on the show about, you know, the mythology of the right wing that the rest of the press buys into about caring about deficits. Is it illegal immigrants or legal immigrants that Republicans hate? Well, Laura Ingraham confessed, so we'll talk about that as well. And thank you guys for all the members make everything possible. So TYT.com/join. Now we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we find out what the alt-right really thinks. They did a study, they answered, And the answers are both unsurprising to us to some degree, but still, it is a level of shocking. So we'll talk about that when we return. All right, back on the Young Turks. Read a couple comments here. Let's go to Twitter first. Keld Visser says, yay, John and Francesca on the same panel. Wonderful power panel goes well with my giant Friday steak. Okay, all right. So I guess you guys are the steak and we're the chopped liver over here.
I know, right? Seriously. We don't even have to make that joke. It's already there. It's built into it.
Keld Visser sounds like a name out of Usual Suspects, right?
Yeah.
I thought like a Lord of the Rings or something.
Yeah.
Also, Francesca was on the Damage Report this morning. She's my guest. So okay. You can look forward to that as well.
He obviously is Italian, has an Italian bias, which is
why. Yeah. Obviously, you know how those Italians are. Okay.
No, I was just going to say, that's all Italians say.
All right, and one more comment. This one's from YouTube Super Chat. And thank you in a couple of different ways, because Stephen Luke writes in, I saw a comment on Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's video that said, why don't you go watch your fat brown buffalo? So here I am. Also decided to upgrade my TYT membership and sent in $10 instead of $5. Hashtag trolls feed TYT. As I've said many times, you're not coming for us, we're coming for you. So, you know, you go spread that stuff, and all it does is make us bigger and bigger. And thank you guys. And if you can do the $10 membership, that is fantastic. It makes a giant difference. TYT.com/join.
Yeah. I don't even know what that comment's supposed to, like, why don't you go watch him? Well, he probably will. He probably likes you.
That's what he's saying.
That's not even an attack. Okay, well, yeah. I guess trolls have to start somewhere. Let's turn to some more organized trolls. American white supremacists have got a little bit of an image problem. And not just with the khakis, it's, you know, with the racism and the tiki torches and the murdering protesters and all of that. And apparently, it has taken a while, but some of them, their leadership, are starting to recognize the problem that they're having and selling themselves to the American people. And so online conversations have been going on about what American white supremacists should do, what they shouldn't do, especially with this weekend's Unite the Right 2 protest going on. Personally, I never like sequels. I think this one's going to be even worse than the first. I don't think the Emperor is going to strike back against them, because I think the Empire supports the alt-right in this case. But let's turn to what some of the most high-profile white supremacists in the country are advising other racists on. First, we have Andrew Anglin, who runs the Daily Stormer, which I swear I've heard 5 times is out of money and shutting down, but it keeps on going. So he said, and this is one of my favorite quotes of the entire year, we cannot win a battle on the streets. We cannot win a protest movement organizational battle. We are currently winning a culture war, and we're long before the, and this is his words, kike media tricked us into Charlottesville. Just to give an idea of who he is as a person. That's who he is as a person. He's also a little bit detached, because he says we need to remain in the realm of the hip, cool, sexy, fun. We need to speak to the culture. We do not want the image of being a bunch of weird losers who march around like a-holes while completely outnumbered and get mocked by the entire planet. That is exactly what you do not want. And basically, that is what the alt-right has become synonymous with post-Charlottesville. That is the most accurate self-analysis of a member of a movement that I've ever seen.
I like the way he wants their movement to basically be named after like the TLC album.
Yeah.
Crazy,
yeah,
sexy,
cool. Wouldn't it be crazy? Yeah. Did the Third Reich have that image problem? Like, we need to be und cool und sexy und hip and, killing Jews. Like, what is off? Like,
he thinks, he thinks that they're that now. That is amazing. He thinks.
Right. We can't lose it. We can't lose the cool.
Right after he just says the K word media tricked us
in. I'm a Jew. I let you. You can use you can use kike. I give you points.
Okay, well,
I don't like it.
Only in this context.
Tricked us into Charlottesville.
Just like.
Tricked us into organizing and murdering a counter-protester. Right. Yeah. That was a fabulous trick that they willingly did. I mean, yeah. I personally, like, I really like trolling the right. I will literally die to accomplish that. Mm. How twisted is your worldview if you believe that that is why the murder happened?
Yeah, also, aren't these guys, like, supposed to be all alpha and butch and everything? Like, man up. You're saying you were tricked into doing this? I mean, I don't see the world with that gender binary, but they do, so just be consistent.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things here. So, one, you guys are right about all these things. I mean, the idea of these Nazis trying to look sexy and hip, it's Okay, and then the whole idea we got tricked into it. So wait, if the Jews keep tricking you into everything, are you really the superior race? Mm.
Okay. True facts.
Okay, and then, but to me, my favorite part is really the essence of it, which I think you guys are all getting at, which is, that you are dorks and you are loathsome. And so Charlottesville revealed that. You didn't get tricked into it. You showed up. That's all you did. You showed up. Right. And this is Andrew Anglin saying, don't show up. Otherwise, they'll find out who we are. Yeah. Right. That we're just a bunch of dorks, losers. Yeah. Bunch of losers that are so pathetic that we have to blame other people for our problems and be victims and cry and go, oh, my God, it's not my fault that I'm a loser. It's the Jews who are so superior to us and who control everything. Well, why aren't you controlling everything? I thought you were the alpha. Right. It turns out you're not much of an alpha at all, right?
So God, I wish that like Donald Trump had that kind of humility to be like, hey, base, stay home. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, stay home because you're embarrassing terrible. Me.
Yeah.
If only. I feel like Anglin has a little bit more humility. At the same time, I also feel like this is a little bit of an attempt to wash your hands before whatever might down tomorrow when this Unite the Right 2 rally is going to take place. But I do remember he had another statement, a manifesto, of course, before the first rally, which was, it basically said, Katie, what you were saying, that like they were so emo. It was like a Goo Goo Dolls song. They were just like, we feel emasculated. Yeah. We have problems with women. We need therapy, guys. Like, we need to, you know, put down the whatever. What are they reading? I don't even know. Put down the 4chan.
No.
Not that you can put it. I don't know. They might have
the
4chan
Mein Kampf.
Tab.
The Mein Kampf.
Put tablet. Down the Mein Kampf. And get outside, talk to people.
So you brought up the victim mentality. So I want to read a couple more of their quotes because we also have some psychological research in the alt-right that is just fascinating. So let's turn now to Right Realist, where I go for all of my white supremacist news. Right Realist said, nobody in the public is going to step up to defend KKK Nazi white supremacists. Our goal should be a positive, mainstream movement which champions racial, ethnic, and cultural preservation and advocacy for all peoples. Good luck with that. And since this is a Western movement, it will primarily focus on whites who are uniquely denied the right to guard their survival and advocate their interests. As much as I loved watching the Charlottesville warm-up rally, the image of an angry, torch-bearing whites chanting racist slogans is not what we are looking for. I love that they constantly talk about how they're not allowed to survive. They're not allowed to protect themselves. I've read stories about maybe in Argentina or Chile. There's two people left who speak a certain language. They're the only two, and they don't talk. Maybe you've heard about this. They're less concerned about their survival than the whites of America, which I've walked around. People that look like me are everywhere, and they are just deathly afraid that it could just be gone any second.
It's so fragile. Oh,
yeah,
God.
But that goes to the very, very core of it in two ways. One is, what is the overall grievance? The overall grievance is we used to rule over you.
Yeah.
And it's so annoying, this whole equality thing. I don't want equality of opportunity. I don't want you to have the same opportunity that I have. And so it's not that anyone's making whites inferior. Has there ever been a law proposed in the United States of America to make whites have less rights than anyone else? Never.
It's just
ever,
when you're
ever,
used to
ever.
Being the top dog, equality feels like oppression. When you're used to dominating everyone else,
that's exactly right.
Then it feels like a demotion when you're living in an equal society.
That's right. They're saying it feels like you're taking something away from me. But what? What is it that we're taking away? The ability to oppress other people and be above them, etc.
Yes.
Well, we're not saying that minorities should have unfair advantages. We're just saying even playing field. I mean, that's supposed to be the American dream, equality of opportunity. So I know that they lie and they say, oh, you guys want equality of results. It's just not true, okay? And so now the second part of it is what that guy's getting to, which is, guys, remember the subtle way to do this, the right way to do this, is to not chant the things we actually believe. Because he says in the piece that John just quoted, I loved it. I loved seeing the blood and soil chant. That's the one he was referring to, the warm-up rally where they had the tiki torches and were chanting literal Nazi chants.
They were chanting,
but we're scaring people with our hatred.
Yeah. Right. And he's like, the better way to do it is to fight for the same exact things, but do it more subtly so that two things happen. One is that we don't seem like extremists, even though we are extremists. And secondly, we give people permission to join us.
Yeah.
So
it's a sanitized version.
That's right, because there are a lot of people, Trump voters, who actually believe the same things. Not that, hey, the Nazis are good, but it sucks that we're losing that our privilege.
The so-called white race is losing out. And I think, again, it's two things. One, it completely puts... You have no concept of American history whatsoever, right? So it's like we were born yesterday, literally, or this morning I woke up and I was born and suddenly someone told me about white privilege and I felt hurt in my feelings. But I have no concept of, I don't know, Native American genocide, slavery, Jim Crow laws, patriarchy, women couldn't vote. You know, like I don't actually live in this country with a history that it has. And I think that you were speaking that in terms of like it feels like oppression to them. And I think culturally, it's like, homie, go play Ultimate Frisbee, dude. Go play Magic Cards. I don't know. There's tons of culture for you. Just because you heard that maybe James Bond might one day could not be white.
Yeah.
And like you don't like the show Black-ish. That doesn't mean that you're irrelevant. You're very relevant. Trust me, you're relevant. Just don't wear the khakis. You guys look like you're in a fall into the Gap ad, except you were never allowed to leave that room.
I think that also, you know, one of the issues is that the United States defeated the Nazis. We fought against the Nazis in World War II. So there's a bit of a conflicted ideology. People don't know how to grapple with those two things. So even that's why I think people are like, don't do the Nazi thing. It's not a good look. We may have their ideas, but we know that like we went to war against them and we're kind of proud of that. And the official history says they're the bad guys. So let's just take their ideas and make them more palatable. And not look like thugs. I think one of the people used that word. Mm-hmm. And it's your like kinder, gentler white supremacy.
Really, really quickly, that like the idea of freedom also is really crazy. I think that they feel like freedom is finite, right? That like this all works like money. Their freedom is a finite amount and then it disappears and there's no more for anybody. It's like Cheerios. Like, no, man, that's not how freedom works. That's equality and freedom are endless. That's the goal of this
nation. Oh, like it's a zero sum game.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not a zero sum game. And by the way, there was another thing that we went to war against that they also are in favor of. The Confederacy.
Right.
And by the way, Confederate flags will be allowed at this
rally. Right, but they don't want other ones, right? They said that they don't want, you can have American and Confederate, but I guess they don't want swastikas.
Yeah.
It would be funny to look at the other ones that they were, like, it's some like us, America Samoa, like Guam. I wonder what the other ones are that they're like, don't do that.
Island Nation of Tonga.
There were a lot of requests for that.
Yeah.
Okay, let's turn to something related. So what do the alt-right really think about different groups in America? I think you have a basic idea, but it is very interesting to see it sort of quantified. And especially now we have some psychological research about how self-identified members of the alt-right rank different groups. So you might think, well, they hate everybody. And that is largely the case, everybody who's not white. But they do have some preferences, and I think that they're very interesting. So we've got the results of a new study by professors at University of Alabama. And if you can bring up graphic 10, you're going to see a really interesting new way to get to the core of what people think about different groups. You're going to see a little picture with some bars. And the basic idea is that the people, again, this is you have a control group or not alt-right, and then you have members who say that they're alt-right. And they have this little thing here where they're supposed to grab those sliders for each one. So, for instance, for Swedes, how evolved do you think this group is? And the more to the right you put them, the more evolved you think that they are. And they get this for a whole ton of different groups and individuals. And here is how, again, self-described members of the alt-right ended up ranking different groups. They rated Muslims at a 55.4 out of 100, bear in mind, Democrats at 60, Black people at 65, roughly. Mexicans slightly higher. Journalists are even lower. They're down below Democrats. They're at 58%. Jews at 73. Feminists at 57. Woo! So to give you an idea, this I would not have expected this. They actually prefer African Americans to journalists.
Yeah.
They prefer Jews to feminists, actually, by a significant chunk, which is really interesting.
I'm a feminist journalist, so I'm
a feminist Jewish journalist, so I don't know. I'm like totally devolved. I'm like, yeah.
I'm actually hanging in there because they, believe it or not, they have Turks.
Yeah,
on
I know.
Here.
They say,
which is interesting.
Yeah.
At 63.88%.
Right. We are right underneath Black people.
but above Democrats.
That is interesting.
We're between blacks and Democrats.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, shout out to these racists for knowing that Arabs and Muslims aren't the same.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah, right? I mean, I'm sure they didn't come up with the categories, but
and don't ask them for more specifics than that.
I just got to say two more things though about the racial categories because I'm so deeply amused by them. Guess which nation scored fairly well? The Russians. They were fairly high on that standard.
Yeah.
But above the Russians and above even Christians and certainly women is Swedes. Now, how is that for ironic? Because the Swedish are quite socialist.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it isn't about ideology. It isn't about politics. The Swedes are about as socialist as you get. But they're also about as white as you get.
Well, that's why the Swedes aren't at 100. You know, you could get to 100 if you took out the socialism. Now, I want to give you a point of comparison for the alt-right. You got those numbers for all those different groups. White people were scored at 91.8%. So even they don't think that us whites are fully evolved necessarily, but far higher than others. And the comparison group, these are people that are not members of the alt-right. They score all groups in the 80s or 90s on average. So the alt-righters were nearly a full standard deviation more extreme than others. And hold on really fast, before commentary, I have just two individuals that I think are really interesting. So Donald Trump was actually put on there. He's at an 82 in evolution, by the way, which means—
Extremely involved.
Extremely involved, but not as much as other white people in general, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah.
It's lower than that. And do you know, I think the lowest score any person or group got? Hillary Clinton, actually, at 54.
No, amazing. My favorite is Hillary Clinton came in last, right below Muslims,
right.
She's worse than Muslims.
Less evolved than Muslims.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I thought she would be seen by them as kind of like too evolved. You know what I mean?
Like a lizard.
A feminist, like a lizard or something, or like something unnatural. I didn't think that they would categorize her as kind of like a prehistoric figure.
Mm-hmm. This whole study is such—
I know, but I guess she's unnatural, but I see them as the way that they see her as almost like—
No,
beyond.
Like an evil mastermind.
She's the chupacabra. She's the rice chupacabra. She doesn't really exist, and she just exists in their imagination. This whole thing is BS. If you responded to this, you are this, like, least evolved state. I'm sorry, this is you. Because can you imagine? You saw the people who weren't so-called in the alt-right, and they were all like, I don't know, 80 or 90 for all of them. Why are you asking me about Hillary Clinton? And then the alt-right's like, okay, yeah, I know exactly what I'm going to say. Uh-huh. Like, just come on.
Government employees also.
I know. Well, what was the number on that?
Government employees is 70%.
By the way,
they don't like government employees.
And Republicans who refuse to vote for Trump is 69. That's a hilarious.
By the way, the correct answer, even the regular people who answered this answered it obviously too low. The correct answer is 100 for each category.
It doesn't mean what they think it means.
If they asked me this study, I'd be like, wait, is this a trick question?
Right.
Yeah, they're all homo sapiens, 100.
I hope they got like an Amazon gift card for answering this or like something.
They did, didn't they? I think they picked the study on Amazon. That's how they lured people to. Yeah.
You know what would have been hilarious? If they put homo sapien on the list? They're not involved at all.
The gays, they're
unnatural. And I'm sure that the scientists know this, but it doesn't even mean anything to say how evolved is something. It's not like someday if we work really hard, we're going to hit evolved.
Right. Mm.
It's an ongoing process that the people responding to this probably don't believe in anyway.
Isn't the whole thing a myth? Why are they even, they should protest
this
questionnaire. It's like based on the fallacy of evolution.
There was definitely like some really smart like Christian conservatives like, evolution.
Yeah, trick question. I got you. Nice try.
Trick.
Yeah. On average, the alt-right dehumanize their opponents to the same degree, and this is disturbing on two levels, that average Americans dehumanize ISIS. So it's scary that the alt-right views the rest of us like ISIS, but it's also scary that we dehumanize anyone. Yeah. So now look, ISIS is a terrorist group and they do terrible, terrible things and you know you want to defeat them, that makes all the sense in the world, so do we. Right? But we do have a tendency to dehumanize all of our opponents. And so what would make more sense is figuring out their rationale so that you could defeat them in a more, both more efficiently and thoroughly, and starting to dehumanize any human being goes down a dark, dark path, which makes it easier and easier to bomb people near ISIS.
Exactly. Right, that's the irony, is that it is partially because now, what's interesting is that you have these alt-righters who embrace their dehumanization. They don't have a problem saying how devolved someone is. And as is said in this article, you know, some psychologists are worried that there's the effect of kind of self-censorship. Who's going to say, I view this person as this dehumanized or that dehumanized? But the real issue, one of the issues, is that, of course, there's all this propaganda that's used to justify our invading, our bombing, our droning other countries. We do have a dehumanized view of brown people in other countries. And that means that that, of course, creates kind of fodder for ISIS recruitment. They see that. And then that is what turns a lot of them, I'm making a big generalization, but at least some of them, that radicalizes people. Yeah. When they see, they've done studies on this, not this study, but they've done studies on how your empathy, they've like measured empathy and it lowers. It's lowered when you think that someone isn't playing fair. Like they've literally had people play a chess game against each other.
Sure.
Then they send the people into different rooms. They like fake torture one. And if the person thinks that that other person played the chess game fairly, their empathy goes off. If they do the same thing with someone who they think cheated, their empathy doesn't go off as much. So it's kind of...
Yeah.
Can I also just say that, I mean, again, I said it was stupid, and I just want to double down on that. Because I think generally, as a progressive who obviously believes that racism is real and systemic racism is absolutely real, but also as someone who's mixed race and someone who is like very much like, I don't want you to put me in like one category or the other. Like, let's try to, on the one hand, like abolish racism as well as like understand that people are fluid and race is a construct for sure, and that kind
of racists identify,
and that racists identify, and like buying into a lot of these like categories of like you're either this or that, you're, you know, it's like let's walk that a little bit back. Although I'm so glad we're doing this story.
Yeah, so
now I'm getting that.
So let me.
I didn't design the study, just to be
right.
Clear.
Yeah.
How dare you?
So let me.
I have designed studies, not this one.
Let me address two more things. One is. They ask people, I think there are good reasons, do you agree with the statement? I think there are good reasons to have organizations that look out for the interests of whites.
It's and called the federal government.
Now, what this is showing is that today people are coming out and saying yes to that in record severity, in a sense, right? Not in just the numbers, but the degree to which they agree with that statement. And the researcher said he had never seen a disparity that large between the average American saying generally no, and these alt-right guys who are massively saying yes, yes, we have to have a lookout for whites, okay? Yep. And so, and I think what that goes to show, it's fairly clear, is that they have gotten permission to come out of the closet.
Right, exactly. 100%. They're emboldened.
That's right. And so in the past, the researchers also said this, they had to put the questions more subtly to try to get at racial undertones. Hmm. Now they don't have to do that. They just ask them, and they go, oh, yeah, well, white people are better, and you should look out for white people, and other races are less evolved. They're like, whoa, this is not what we're used to. Maybe they might have thought it before, but they would have been afraid to say it. Now they are not afraid to say it.
Yep.
Gee, I wonder what the difference is in
times. There's one thing, if I could just raise one slight objection I have to the analysis of the study. This comes up a lot, which is that it says alt-righters aren't particularly socially isolated or worried about the economy. This is the ye olde economic anxiety issue. Mm-hmm. And it says also important, alt-righters in the sample aren't all that concerned about the economy. The survey used a common set of Pew questions that asked about the current state of the economy and about whether participants feel like they are going to improve, things are going to improve for them. Here, both groups report about the same levels of confidence in the economy. So I think that people often get this issue wrong, which is that a big way that economic anxiety works is that people don't say, I'm struggling and I'm hurting financially and economically, ergo, I'm going to scapegoat other people. That's kind of the point of it, right? Like, it's not, I don't think it should be a hot take. Most historians say that one of the reasons the Holocaust happened was because of the economic situation in Weimar Germany, right? That makes people that much more susceptible. So I think that there's really, people are very interested in a narrative that moralizes racism. And I'm not giving anyone a get out of jail free card, but I do think that the idea that people don't discuss economic anxiety means that none of this is grounded in economic anxiety, or I should say none of this is exacerbated by it, is unwise.
I totally agree, and you could tell in actually another part of the study where they say that they are worried that they are being displaced by the number of immigrants and outsiders, and that these see themselves as potential victims. So
that doesn't necessarily mean economically displaced. They could mean governmentally, politically, culturally.
I hear you, and I think that what's we're getting to the same thing but with different words: loss of status, power, and maybe they don't say it as money and wages, right, etc. But they feel displaced, that they've lost some sort of privilege or dignity, to put it kindly, and status, and that is partly financial, but also partly a matter of power. And so, but that is what they feel, and that is what they are reacting to.
Which doesn't mean we're catering to them by saying this. So then oftentimes when you make that point, people are like, stop catering to racism or racism. We're not doing that. We're trying to be honest about what makes these things worse and what makes people that much more susceptible to narratives of scapegoating. And I think that, like, as someone who wants to abolish racism, or as a Jew who's, there's no real anti-Semitism today, but historically, as someone whose people were, you know, thanks in large part to economic anxiety, killed off a lot, I think that it's important to talk about this while at the same time, of course, not accepting the racism. But we have to look at what we can do besides just saying, check your white privilege, which doesn't work.
It's also our weakness. We're progressives. We're empathetic. Ugh. We're supposed to understand, and we do.
But look, I want to understand ISIS, as I explained earlier. I also want to understand
the sympathizer.
That's right. I also want to understand the alt-right.
Right.
And I want to be able to figure out how to combat that and get people to go in a different direction. And finally, the thing that they cared most about and what they responded to most was authoritarianism. And I found that to be interesting. They asked, you know, they looked for what they called a dark triad. Whether they were basically psychopaths, narcissistic, Machiavellian, etc. And they were, but
are they single?
Only. But
I love this, the dark triad.
Right. But only somewhat higher levels than average. What really ranks super high was deference to authority figures, strong leaders, etc. Yeah. And that is, I mean, this is the extreme right wing, but it is a right wing frame of mind overall, not end of the spectrum of bow your head.
Yep.
So there's this weird dynamic of, I want to be superior, but I'm afraid the Jews rule us all, then I don't know how you are superior, right? That's part of, and anti-Semitism is a huge part of this, right? And then the second thing is, I want to be superior, but I want to make sure there's a strong leader I can bow down to. It's a fascinating
stew. It hurts to think too hard. Yeah. I think for
me. I should also clarify, there is anti-Semitism. It doesn't exist as it used to exist, so people don't think I'm being a total weird, self-loathing Jew or idiot or something.
Right. Of course, unfortunately, it exists at some of the highest levels now, and it is making a comeback.
Right. Yeah.
And that's what we have to look out for here. Okay, all right, we got to take a break, guys. We'll be right back. Thanks for listening to this podcast. You're only halfway through, so hold, stay right here. Just want to remind you, if you want to get all 5 segments of the Young Turks commercial free, these are just 2 of them. Every day we do it. So go to tytnetwork.com/join. And you get the whole 5 segments, 2 hours, ad-free. Do it now. All right, back on the Young Turks. A couple of quick comments here. Melissa Matrice writes in, wasn't Sweden the example Trump gave of where he wants more immigrants to come from?
Yes.
I thought totally it was missing the.
No, that was what Hillary said, we're not.
So missing the irony entirely. Jeff says, obviously feminists are low on the alt-right evolution score sheet because they're afraid of women, especially strong women. That's also true. Lars Nielsen writes in from Sweden. Thank you again, Lars, for using YouTube Super Chat.
It's most important comment of the day.
Yes, the 200 Swedish kroners he gave, which I love.
Nice. Lars
writes in, on Monday I go back to work well-rested after 5 weeks paid vacation.
Ooh.
Our health department says this saves $6 billion of our tax money in healthcare, prioritized correctly. By the way, I'm Swedish and anti-white supremacy. Lars, we know that from all your comments from before.
Look at how smug Lars is. Just because he's more evolved, he's sitting there in Sweden with his beautiful wings and
with
gills.
With his great posture, not hunched over.
Mm-hmm. By the way, maybe they are more evolved. Maybe that's why they have such great socialism in Sweden.
Yeah, maybe.
5 weeks paid vacation. So oh my God.
You know what? We should start here.
Yeah.
Maybe we can't do all of America, but we could do TYT.
Yeah.
All right, next story.
Okay, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the opposite end. So we'll go from Sweden to how we treat the poor in America. Okay, but we have some good news for you. We have perhaps moved one tiny judicial step away from modern debtors' prisons, and that is thanks to a court ruling concerning the actions of the Orleans Parish Criminal District Court, which had instituted what should be something from the dark reaches of American history. U.S. District Judge Sarah S. Vance ruled that the 14th Amendment prohibits jailing criminal defendants who are unable to pay court-ordered fees and fines without giving them a chance to plead poverty. Vance found that the parish we were talking about has a practice of issuing fees while ignoring criminal defendants' financial states and jailing them when they fail to pay. So an OPCDC, that's the parish judge, named in the suit, estimated that 95% of criminal convicts in the parish cannot afford an attorney, putting them at risk for being jailed upon failure to pay. And for reasons we'll get into in just a little bit, they seem fully aware of the consequences of this policy that they're setting up, how they will personally benefit from it, and how obviously the poorest among us will end up in jail. Where, by the way, if you're the sort of person that can't afford to pay for an attorney or for your fines and fees, you are least prepared to spend extra time in jail, probably losing your job, maybe losing your apartment. If you have a business, you'd be losing that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And not only that, I remember back at AJ Plus, we did a whole, like, you know, breakdown of this, and it's just insane, right? So they call it actually offender-funded justice. So not only is it people who are not able to pay for their, let's say it's a parking ticket, or let's say they were driving without a license or it expired or whatever, then not only is it like everything's piling on top, so like the fees increase, but at the point where you have to, let's say, do like a drug test, or you have to even spend a night in prison, or wear an ankle bracelet, or have a DNA, like all these different tests, you pay for that. But actually, the people who are being fined, the so-called prisoners, are then further in debt, and it's just this horrible debt spiral. And there are, on top of that, probation companies, like privatized probation companies, everyone's just making a killing off of the 14th Amendment not being like applied and observed, and then another Supreme Court ruling in 83 that like doubled down on that. So this is a huge benefit. I mean, but like we're talking 40 states have debtor-funded justice or fender-funded justice.
Which judges get they get rich off of.
Yeah. So Vance has ruled now, changing the policy, that now judges who directly benefit from fees cannot order payment or determine who's unable to pay. The fees were being collected each year, put into this big fund, and then the judges were using that for benefits, paying for staff and things like that, which is just about the sickest thing I could imagine.
It's such an open conflict of interest.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you can't quite believe what we're saying, let me just be clear. The judge says, okay, you have to pay fines, and those fines go towards not just the staff salaries, but to extra benefits for the judge, which of course gives them an incentive to put more fines and fees, and also gives them an incentive to imprison you so that there's more consequences for you not paying those fines and fees that go straight into sometimes literally his pocket.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't find a bigger conflict of interest. So this ruling is really important, and I hope that it gets upheld. And it does follow Supreme Court precedent. They were using a loophole to try to get around it. And so that leads to two more things about this that's really important. I have to confess that I had a little bit of privilege here. So, for a long time, I was very poor as a struggling talk show host, et cetera. My family is okay. It's the upper middle class, not rich, but we lived in a nice suburb off of New York, et cetera. And we never had, if I went to prison, I never had to worry whether my dad was going to bail me out or not. He'd find a way to bail me out. And so I never understood enough to what degree we put poor people in prison for being poor.
Yep.
And there's a couple of different ways that you do that. One is bail. So if you're rich or middle class, you have enough money for bail and you're free to go until your trial. If you're poor, you sit in prison even though you haven't been convicted. So that's an absolute outrage, and that needs to be reformed. It's because it's not about the crime. It's about whether you are poor or rich.
Yeah.
That's the only reason why you're in jail. Because if the crime was bad enough, they'd say you can't get bail.
No matter
or you're
what.
A danger right. or you're a flight risk, yeah. right? That's a different category. Bail is just to theoretically incentivize you to come back. But for a rich person, $5,000 bail is nothing. That's not an incentive at all. For a poor person, $5,000 bail is totally unpayable. And that means you're going to sit in prison sometimes years before you get to this. And now there's these fines and fees. And then the second part is a lot of private companies buy the fines of the government. Now, why do they do that? One, they're going to hound you till the rest of your life to collect that. But secondly, they then get the power to imprison you. They cannot imprison you for a private debt,
but they can imprison you for a public debt. So they buy public debt knowing that they could use the, you know, the justice system to take away your freedom to pay them money. So that is, it's a, so that kind of oppression of the poor and some portion
and
of the middle
vulture,
class.
Just like micro vulture capitalism.
Also, people will plead guilty to things that they're not guilty of because they can't afford to sit in, like during the trial.
Absolutely. So there might be a situation that this happens all the time on Rikers Island. Yeah. Actually, Ocasio-Cortez partly ran on this in her campaign because Rikers Island's in her district. Where you go to a prosecutor might go to a poor defendant and go, look, man, you confess whether you did it or you didn't do it, and you're going to get 3 months. If you don't confess, it's going to take you a year to get a trial. Yes. I mean, think about, so the guy thinks, right. I mean, rational person doesn't want to sit in jail for a year, no matter what, even if they're perfectly innocent. Yeah. But then you have to admit that you were guilty, and then that's on your record, because and then that cycle of poverty continues. So if you're not poor or lower middle class, and you never experienced this, please open your eyes to it and understand that we're supposed to be a country of freedom and equality, and this is the exact opposite.
And that justice is supposed to be blind. And you have also with crack and cocaine, every now and then the criminal justice system kind of plays itself. They pretend that they forget that they're supposed to pretend to be neutral, and they show their hand. So again, with cocaine and crack was much more used by poor people and black people. Cocaine was much more used by rich people and white people in the aggregate. And so the sentencing for crack is much, much higher than it is for cocaine. You get many more years. And there was no reason for that except for basically classism and racism.
And also, I just want to remind everyone, these are tiny infractions that build and build and build. So it's not necessarily, there's no theft, there's no battery. It's just, it's like, again, it's a driving without a license. It's a parking ticket. And then they build and build and build. I know one of the towns, Ferguson, Missouri, of all places, right, was like some insane percent of their income came from these kinds of these kinds of fees, and like then again all the people profiting off of it.
So. Yeah. All right, we got to run. Katie, thank you for coming. John, everybody, check out Damage Report. Katie podcast.
Yeah, the Katie Halper Show.
That's very complicated. I don't know if you guys can remember the Katie Halper Show. Who did
Where
you name
did
it
come
after?
From?
Unclear. I don't want to reveal it now. Okay. I don't feel comfortable.
You don't find out until the end of the third season.
Exactly. Yeah,
it's a Jewish feminist journalist.
Yeah, right. Who will go unnamed for now. Yeah.
All right. We got a whole nother hour and a different power panel. But when we come back, I will respond to Ted Cruz. I offered him a debate. He responded. We'll talk about it when we return. Thanks for watching what I hope was a lovely edition of the Young Turks. Now, you know that is two of the five segments that we do because that's free. We want to have you support independent media and come watch the whole show that we do every day. That's five segments overall, no ads at all. That's at tytnetwork.com/join. Come become a member. Thanks for watching either way. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/tyt. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.